From death row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are produced by Noel Hanrahan for Prison Radio.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. Special thanks today to Hassan Banura from KPFK in LA. I'm Aura Bogado.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where the time is just about 7 o'clock. Time for Off the Hook. By popular request, the entire theme played until the very end. Well, good evening. It's Off the Hook. Back live. Well, I'm back live here in the studio. I'm Emmanuel Goldstein, joined over there by Mike.
Hi.
And you were back live last week.
Well, I was alive every time I've been on the show.
Alive, live, as in the studio, as opposed to being in Berlin like we were recently.
And you could be live from Berlin.
That's true. And Kevin is not on the other side of the room. I mean, no, wait, I got that wrong. Sorry. On the other side of the room is not Kevin.
Yeah, hello.
It means the same thing.
More or less.
All right. How are you not, Kevin?
Well.
Good. And down there in Philadelphia, Bernie S.
I'm almost live, delayed by about half a second by Sprint PCS. You started almost a whole minute early this morning, today.
Yeah, you know, and the reason for that, I tried to play a promotional cart, as we have here in the studio, and it says very clearly that it's position two on the board, and I was looking for position two, and it didn't come up, and it actually is position one. I now know that. So for future reference, I will do the exact opposite of what is labeled on the board.
We got to hear the whole song, so that's good.
There's some good that came out of this tragedy, yes, some good. Okay, we have all kinds of good and bad things to talk about tonight and a couple of adventures to embark upon as well. For those tuning in for the first time, and it being a new year, I know people get radios for the first time and start testing them out and finding stations. You found the only show about hackers that's on New York radio. And in fact, it's on radio in the States, I think.
Well,
do we know of any other hacker shows that are on actual FM radio?
I don't know of any, but yeah. There might be some.
If there are some out there, we'd like to know about them so we can help you guys get the word out. Everybody can do internet radio, that's true, and that's something, but there's something to be said about broadcasting on a tower. And we broadcast off the Empire State Building, so that's quite a tower right there.
And on shortwave.
And on shortwave, too. We're simulcasting, I believe. What frequency can we be found on?
7.415 megahertz, and it really is 50,000 watts effective radiated power from the state of Maine, broadcast in a southwesterly direction. So basically most of the continental U.S. can pick that up on a on a reasonable shortwave radio, which can cost $50 or more.
All right. Well, we like to hear from those people listening to us on shortwave, actually. In fact, send us email, oth@2600.com. Let's see how that 50,000-watt radio station really reaches the Western Hemisphere. And for those of you listening on lowly WBAI, broadcasting from the top of the Empire State Building into four different states, well, you can call in later, too, or write to us, oth@2600.com. We'd like to hear from you as well. All right, we have a bunch of different stories that are pretty interesting, I think. This involving hackers. The headline was Hackers Force Pennsylvania to Shut State Website. Yeah, that's right. Hackers have infiltrated Pennsylvania's government website. They did this on Friday, forcing administrators to shut down nearly the entire site for several hours. Hackers broke into the pages... Of the Departments of Labor and Industry, Education, and Military and Veteran Affairs. I'm not sure where that breaks up exactly. There's a lot of ands in there. But various departments, Labor, Industry, Education, Military, Veterans Affairs, as well as the Pennsylvania Lottery. Oh, I could have had a lot of fun with that.
Well,
breaking into the lottery. Imagine announcing the wrong numbers. It's all sorts of fun you could have. They say state information technology officers also learned on Friday that four other states and a university had been attacked in a similar manner. It wasn't immediately clear which other state websites were attacked. I don't know why it wasn't clear. Maybe they couldn't figure it out themselves. A message left with the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
What?
Yeah. Seeking comment was not immediately returned, probably because they've forgotten that they even exist, and no one's been in that room for years. Investigators tracked the source of the attack to a domain registered in China. Yeah. They say that a hacker got into what they call a back door, and they say it was more than we needed to take down those sites to make sure a virus couldn't spread. They also say it is not unusual for the state's computer system to be the target of hackers, but having problems at four separate branches of state government prompted the decision to take down nearly the entire system. This story is pretty wacky as far as I'm concerned because, well, first of all, simply breaking into a site or taking advantage of a security hole has nothing to do with hackers. Anybody could have done this. A machine could have done this. It could have been done automatically. But somehow hackers get demonized yet again as sitting around and figuring out ways.
Manual, four separate branches.
Yes.
Yeah, four
like,
separate
like
branches.
The latest, I didn't know that those were actual branches. They might be like twigs of the government, but they're not four separate branches of state government. You've got the, just like the federal government, you've got the legislative branch, the judicial branch, and the executive branch. Well, none of those were apparently affected.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably all under one, I don't know, labor and industry, education, military and veterans affairs, and a lottery. You know, is that all four branches?
I don't
Maybe
know.
Maybe the lottery is a branch of the government now.
It might as well be. But the thing that's amazing about this is that what's the story? Web pages have been hacked, and I use that term very loosely, for almost decades now. It's not a big deal when it happens. You simply fix it, replace it, back it up or whatever, move on. I don't understand how this made headlines. I think there's been more web page hacking in years past than there have been in weeks past. So,
Emmanuel?
So, yes.
The best quote in this story, which you might have skipped over, was some woman named Mia Devane. She was the spokeswoman for the Office of Administration, which I guess is part of the executive branch. I heard her on a local news station here saying, and it's in the story too, that there was, quote, no reason to think anyone's personal data had been compromised or that any damage occurred when a hacker got into what we would say was a back door. There's no reason to think that because they didn't even check, apparently.
Well, let me put it this way. If personal information is stored on a web page accessible to the outside world, you know what? Your information has already been compromised. Doesn't take somebody breaking in and uncovering that to make it a compromised situation. These morons who go around putting your data in all sorts of insecure places, they're the ones that should be prosecuted. They're the ones that should be held accountable when this happens. And it's happening all the time. I'm not talking about hacked web pages. I'm talking about data going missing, things winding up on hard drives that get left in cars or on laptops that go missing. They do not take care of the data they're entrusted with. That's the real problem.
Did you hear about these brilliant systems administrators at Sears?
No, I didn't know they had any at Sears.
Well, apparently not. Sears was going to set up this very useful website, apparently, where you could go in and see all your past purchases, and if something was out of warranty, you could learn all that. But the way that you proved you were you was you just entered your name and address, and so anyone could enter anyone's name and address and see all the things they'd ever bought at Sears.
Wait a minute. Wait, whoa. You're saying that all you had to do on this Sears system was enter information that could be found in a phone book, someone's last name and address. That simple. Nothing else? I mean, not even use the zip code as verification or anything?
I didn't try it myself. I just read some news reports about it, but that seemed to be. Maybe you need a zip code. Maybe that's part of the address.
This is from the 1980s, this kind of security mentality.
No, this is from 2008. The year's only a week and a half old, and we've already had this.
I assume by now that must be fixed. I assume that
the same day it was the website was taken down, and they used one of these euphemisms like we've discovered that we really shouldn't have done this in the first place.
Okay, so who's responsible for that? The person who found it or the person who designed it?
The thing is, these companies are so large that I can't imagine there was anything but a large team of people working on designing this, and somehow none of them noticed this obvious problem with it.
Because the team was so large, they probably didn't even know each other.
Maybe.
Working out of many different offices and things like that. It's some things never change. We're here in 2008. By the way, this is our 20th year.
Wow.
Yeah, we started in 1988. Of course, we only did one show in 1988, and it was in October. But still, that's 20 years. It's not bad. And the information is still as valid today as it was 20 years ago. There's still so many morons running around securing computer systems and doing a bad job of it. And having our private information simply handed out to anybody interested in looking at it. It's so sad. Now, speaking of websites and domains and things like that, this is a story that I think this hit Slashdot today concerning network solutions. There's this site. Apparently, this guy has a blog or something. His name is Bill Hartzer, BillHartzer.com. He has a story called Network Solutions Registering Domains After Availability lookup. Let me read the first paragraph or so. A friend tipped me off to a domain state thread, I'm not sure what that is exactly, that warns you not to look up a domain name at Network Solutions. Don't look it up at Network Solutions. In other words, don't go to Network Solutions' website and do a whois to see if a site is available. If you go there and you look up a domain name to see if it's registered, then Network Solutions, within seconds, will buy the domain name, causing you to have to go buy it from them. So in other words, to explain this, let's say you wanted to register a domain, something on the Internet. You would go to this registrar. Network Solutions is one of the registrars. In fact, it used to be the only one. And you enter the name that you're looking for. It says, yes, this name is available. Would you like to register it? Yes or no? If you dare to go to a different registrar, like, say, GoDaddy or something like that, that happens to be much, much cheaper. And that's not an ad for GoDaddy. It's just as a fact that Network Solutions tends to be more expensive. You won't be able to register it because Network Solutions will have already reserved it. Apparently, that's their service. They reserve it for you by buying it themselves or somehow putting a temporary block on it. And that's something that is cause for great concern, apparently, if you look it up through them. I tried this. I actually looked up, oh, my God, NetworkSolutionsReallySucks.com, and I found that it was available. And then I kept doing a whois on it to see if it was snatched up by Network Solutions, and throughout the course of today it was not. So maybe they changed this after this story hit the mass media. I don't know, but what do you guys think of that? You think that's legitimate business practices?
Well, I think it can cost them hundreds of millions of dollars if someone wrote a script that just constantly inputted random whois lookups.
No, I can't hear you shaking your head on
Well, I was waiting for him to finish before disputing. There's this relatively new policy called the buyer's remorse period where you can return a domain within, I think it's a week after you buy it.
Buyer's remorse?
Yeah,
for domains?
Yeah, it's really weird.
So if I register a site and I decide, no, you know, I don't really want to register that site, I can go back and unregister it?
Yeah, somehow. I've never done it myself.
When did this happen?
I think it's referred to as it's called as domain tasting.
Domain tasting.
Yes, that's the industry term for that nomenclature for that particular procedure called domain tasting. You can taste it, and if you decide you don't like it, you can get it back and get your get your fees back or not pay your fees.
I don't like the way this year is starting off. We have this new phrase, domain tasting. It just doesn't work for me. Whose idea was this? Is this what Network Solutions is doing? They're tasting the domains by grabbing them temporarily?
I mean, I haven't checked, but I would imagine that would be the sensible business model.
Well, apparently, they're also selling I have read that Network Solutions is also selling the data to third parties indicating which domains are being looked up, and the third parties are paying for this data and then what's called front-running, reserving the domains so that right after someone does a whois on them, they don't have to, they have to buy them from that particular registrar. So a whole lot of shenanigans going on. If this was going on in any other kind of business, they'd be slapped with restraint of trade and all kinds of other illegal violations. But they tend to get away with it, just like Comcast gets away with blocking packets for certain services and things like that. It just happens. And I don't think that the agencies that are supposed to enforce these types of stuff really have their act together enough to go after them.
Well, now, is this something that only Network Solutions can do, or can any registrar engage in the same same practices?
They could. I don't know if they all do. But the thing is, Network Solutions apparently makes the data available to third parties also about who is running, who is on Network Solutions. So, you know, I could supposedly buy that data from in real time from Network Solutions, find out who was doing who is on, oh my God, Network Solutions really sucks.com, and then reserve it and force you to buy it from me, as opposed to it being free to register from any domain domain registrant. So, you know, that's what's going on, I think.
Wow. Okay. Well, never ceases to amaze me what companies will get up to. Speaking of shenanigans and weirdness and confusion and things like that, we're on the verge of the cutover for television stations. That's something that I think a lot of people have heard in the background. Now, I understand, Bernie, you had quite an adventure with a website run by the government that supposedly exists to help us with this transition, which is taking place next year, by the way. Next year, your television sets, well, will they be any good at all, or do you have to subscribe to something in order to watch a signal anymore?
They'll be good, but they won't be good for picking up analog TV broadcasts. You'll have to use a digital television converter, which will convert the digital television broadcast signal, which will be on a different frequency with a digital modulation scheme, and it will convert it to an analog signal that your TV can understand, much like some of our older listeners will remember was the case with when UHTV stations were brand new technology. You could buy this. Do you remember UHF TV converters, Emmanuel?
Yeah, actually, I remember the UHF antennas, little round antennas. The converters, were they little boxes that you would put on top of your TV set?
Exactly. All the TVs up until, I think it was the late 50s or early 60s. It was an old TV we had in the house, so all it got was channels 2 through 13, VHF channels. And then UHF, the FCC allocated UHF frequencies, I think in the late 50s or early 60s. And then there was a big market on these UHF TV converters, which would convert the UHF frequencies down to a single VHF frequency that you connect to the terminals in the back of your TV set, and then have like a UHF loop antenna connected to the UHF converter, which is basically a UHF down converter receiver. And then you could just tune this knob on top of your TV set and watch all the UHF TV channels. This is going to be very similar. Like, it's just funny how history seems to repeat itself. Same kind of thing. You're going to have this outboard box about the size of a book, that will convert the new digital TV signals to analog, so your old TV will pick it up. And you can get two free government vouchers. The federal government, at your tax dollars' expense, will be giving away two $40 vouchers to anybody who applies at dtv2009.gov.
I looked at this site, and it seems to be a very hostile site.
Yeah, I had a lot of trouble registering. I use a P.O. box for all my mail because I'm a private kind of person, and it wouldn't let me use a P.O. box. I also have another address that I use that's like one of these mailbox, et cetera, kind of places. And it wouldn't let me use that address either, saying,
yeah.
Oh, that's a business address.
They keep denying your request for some reason. Now, I'm using it. I'm on it right now, in fact, www.dtv2009.gov, and I'm applying for a coupon. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put George W. Bush, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. This isn't like a federal felony, is it, to be doing this?
I was just going to say, you don't think he's already got one?
I don't know.
He runs the government. He can get coupons without this whole website thing.
I just figured that he could probably use these. I'm not benefiting from this. He's benefiting.
No, he'll be out of a job by the time this happens.
Okay, well then this is for Obama or Hillary or whoever gets in. What's the zip code down there? 2006, right? Yeah. Okay. Okay. On item number two, check the statement below that best describes your household. All or some of the TVs in my house subscribe to one or more pay services, such as cable or satellite. Or none of the TVs in my house subscribe to one or more pay services, such as cable or satellite. I think you have to click the second one, because
yes.
If you click the first one, you automatically get converted, so you wouldn't qualify. Coupons requested, one or two. Let's request two. And I'm declaring the above is true and correct. And
this is where the wire fraud comes in.
Yeah, wait, I have a question. Where you have to choose all of my TVs or some of my TVs or none of my TVs. If you have no TVs, all statements are true.
Yeah, I guess.
So you can pick whatever one you want.
I'm just doing this for scientific purposes. I just want to see what happens. Now, I have to enter these words that nobody else can see. A computer apparently can't see this. The words are Israel and utterances. So I'm entering those words. And
I have a few utterances about Israel I'd like to, but I can't say them over the air.
See, I'm convinced for some reason this is going to get rejected, so I'm not worried about lying to the website. I'm clicking submit, and let's see what happens. And it's doing stuff. Let's see. Not all the required information was entered correctly. Please review the information below to make sure it is correct and hit submit again.
It does a zip code check, I found.
City can only have characters. What does that mean, city can only have characters? Washington only has characters in it. It's telling me that Washington... You see this, Mike? Come over here. City can only have characters. It's right there. It says Washington. There are no numbers in there. Do you see any numbers?
No.
All right. You want to type it? Maybe it didn't like the way I typed it. But you have to move fast because this website times out after like a minute. If you know. Oh, there's an extra space. Good Lord. I didn't even remember hitting that. Okay. So now I'm going to click everything again on submit. Let's see what happens. See if the coupon's actually, again, not all the required information was entered correctly. Please verify that the address you provided below is correct and submit your application again. It doesn't like the address. This is an address.
You can certify. There's a button where you can click certify. I certify that this is correct, even though that your stupid program doesn't recognize it as correct.
All right. I'm going to click submit again then and see what happens. See if that actually... address could not be verified. How could 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest not be verified?
Maybe you got the wrong zip code.
Okay, well, I think I've demonstrated how difficult the system is. What happens if you certify, Bernie? I won't take that final step and certify.
Well, I did, and it just says, okay, we believe you now, and then it gives you a confirmation number, which it says you should print out,
mm-hmm.
And then they say in a couple of months you'll get... it was going to be a coupon, but now they're going to do it as an electronic debit card. It'd be like a Visa or MasterCard debit card.
Uh-huh.
It can be used at any one of about 100 different electronic retailers, like Circuit City or Best Buy. And you can buy one of these converters with one of these cards. Now, the converters are supposed to cost 50 or 60 bucks, so the 40 bucks only goes towards that. And the rule is if it costs less than $40, you don't get any change back. But that's how it works. So I encourage everybody listening to go to DTV2009.gov and get your free radio receivers. It's a couple of free radios. Well, I mean, they're radio receivers that receive a digital television signal. I don't think there's any law against selling them after you get them. So, you know, you could hoard them and maybe you could use them as bookends, whatever.
Uh-huh. And this is not based on income or anything like that. Anybody qualifies for this, right?
Anybody who swears on the website that they don't subscribe to cable television or satellite television, in which case you wouldn't need one of these converters because you're not relying on the terrestrial analog broadcasts.
But what if you decide that you don't want cable television or satellite in the future? Should you not have one of these things on standby in case you need it?
That's a really good question. Mm-hmm. They didn't think that far ahead. So as I said, everybody should really get theirs now. Because you never know when
that's
you might
right.
need them.
Your cable company could go out of business, or you could violate the terms of your contract with them, and they could ban you from using their service. Who knows? Anything's possible. It's going to be madness in a year. I'm looking forward to this. February of next year?
Yep.
Okay, it's going to be fun, because all of a sudden people are going to realize, oh, my God, my TV doesn't work quite the way it used to anymore. And it
doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
It's going to get snow.
I can hardly wait. All right, speaking of technological advances, Al-Qaeda video messages of Osama bin Laden and Ayman al-Zawahiri can now be downloaded to cell phones. This is amazing. The Terror Network announced this. The Terror Network just happened to announce. Oh, by the way, to help our patrons, you can now download videos directly to your cell phone of our terrorist leaders.
Put out a press release or something?
Apparently they had a press conference. I don't know. I'm not sure how this exactly works. But this is part of their attempts to extend their influence. You know, if Al-Qaeda is able to do these things, and, you know, we haven't mastered this. We can't do this. We can't download things to cell phones. We haven't figured that out.
I don't think I've ever downloaded a video to my cell phone.
If Al-Qaeda is able to do this, I think that's an indication that we need to do a better job. When terrorist organizations actually have the time to develop this technology and be able to send messages to very specific devices like this, you know, those of us not engaging in martyrdom and terrorism and various things like that, we have more time to devote to this. So I think this is a wake-up call. Anyway,
Daniel, we should warn our listeners, if you're entering a federal building where you have to give up your cell phone before you go in, mm-hmm. don't have the Osama bin Laden or Al-Qaeda video running on your cell phone when you hand it to the federal protective officer. Don't do that.
They never tell you exactly how to get this information. This is just, you know, information that they say they know about. For instance, they say the announcement was posted on Friday by Al-Qaeda's media wing Al-Sahab on websites commonly used by Islamic militants. Now, that's all the details they give. And sometimes we think we found one, but we can't really tell for sure if this is, in fact, a website used by Islamic militants. We're constantly looking for them, constantly. But you'd have to know, I guess. You'd have to know in advance in order to be able to download Osama bin Laden's latest message to your cell phone, as if that's the priority. To get the message to your cell phone. Unreal. That's the latest in the news of technology. And over at the airports, this is always fun. They're watching they're watching your expressions as you go through various lines. If a pair of Transportation Security Administration officers strolling by a SeaTac, that's in Seattle, SeaTac airport ticket counter, wish you happy holidays and ask where you're traveling, it might be more than just Christmas spirit.
No, wait a second. If some random people stroll by and say to me, happy holidays, to where are you traveling? I'm not going to be like, why? I'm traveling. You know, I'm not going to be polite to them.
Apparently that's okay. You can do that.
Uh-huh.
It's how you react that they're looking. They're looking at your facial reactions, not so much your answers. Now, this is called the SPOT program, Screening Passengers by Observation Technique, and it's considered an indicator of possible terrorist intent. Central task is to recognize microfacial expressions, microfacial. A flash of feelings that in a fraction of a second reflects emotions such as fear, anger, surprise, or contempt. Yeah, contempt. That's, I think, what I'm going to be charged with, is showing contempt in my face when I'm asked stupid questions. In the SPOT program, we have a conversation with passengers, and we ask them about their trip. When someone lies or tries to be deceptive, there are behavior cues that show it, a brief flash of fear, for instance. Such people are referred for secondary screening, which can include a pat-down search and an X-ray exam. The microfacial expressions are the same across many cultures. Since January 2006, behavior detection officers have referred about 70,000 people for secondary screening. Of those, about 600 to 700 were arrested on a variety of charges, including possession of drugs, weapons violations, and outstanding warrants. Now, here's how it goes. There are simple questions. How are you today? Where are you heading? Is this all your property? Now, they say it's almost irrelevant what your answers are. It's more relevant how you respond. Vague, evasive responses. Fear shows itself. When you do this long enough, you see it right away. Ordinary people who are feeling anxious are much more open with their body movements and their facial expressions as compared to, say, an operational terrorist thinking, I've got to defeat security. We're looking for behavior indicators that show a certain level of stress, fear of anxiety above and beyond that shown by an anxious member of the traveling public. Unreal. And this is something kind of scary. What do you think of it, Bernie?
Well, I think that the Department of Homeland Security, or which the Transportation Security Administration is part of, grossly underestimates the tradecraft of terrorist organizations. These people are highly trained. They do dry runs. They practice. You know, tradecraft is all about the poker face thing. So I think they're only interested really in catching the people that they've already caught, such as those who possessed drugs or were wanted on outstanding warrants. Notice that this article in the Seattle Post-Intelligencer says that their success rate is less than 1% in detaining anybody, for pulling aside anybody and detaining them. And of that 1%, nobody was detained on terrorism charges, just on stuff like they possessed drugs or had an outstanding warrant for an overdue library book or something, apparently. So that's really what this is all about. It's just more of a dragnet, I think, and they're really not taking into account the tradecraft that real terrorists obviously are trained to exercise.
Well, they'll point to, what, the 600 to 700, what were they, arrests or just detaining people? You don't think that's a mark of success?
Well, 600 or 700 people were arrested on a variety of charges, including possession of drugs, weapons violations, and outstanding warrants. The weapons violations—that stuff should be screened by the people going through your bags when your bags go through the X-ray machine anyway. So, you know, I don't see how this is helping anything really, other than just dragnetting people. It's not for Homeland Security, is what I'm saying. It's not for Homeland Security. It's about like just trying to drag people up and see what go on a fishing expedition and see what they got.
Yeah, I think it returns to the point that we're constantly making about how, as you say, it's not about Homeland Security. It's more about just getting people trained to always be accepting of interrogation and to always feel like they're suspects and that they're constantly in danger of something evil going on. And we just did a lot of traveling. Mike and I were going back and forth from various countries. What kind of security did you see on the way back, Mike?
Well, I had to be screened 3 times on my flights back from Germany.
Yeah, me too.
I was screened in Germany and you don't have to take off your shoes in Germany.
You don't have to take off your shoes in Germany, and I didn't have to take off my shoes in England either when I passed through at Heathrow.
I was made to take off my shoes at Heathrow, and they make you be scanned again at Heathrow just because they like that.
Uh-huh.
And then apparently if you're going to the United States, you have to be screened a third time still at Heathrow, twice at Heathrow. They don't have any machines. They just pat you down they told me they select 20% of the people, and I was one of them, and it was very unpleasant. I was very open with my contempt at that point.
There was no doubt in my the final, I don't know if we had the same terminals or anything like that. We took separate flights. But basically the last terminal that I went in was the last part of the screening process. You waited on a line to get into the terminal. And keep in mind, my plane was already 2 hours late. I was kind of annoyed by that at that point. They were 2 hours late because they didn't have enough staff for the airline. And, you know, to me, that means that it's their fault, and they should do something about it. Instead, they leave us in Heathrow where, guess what, they don't take euros. Actually, they do take euros, but they don't take any coin below an actual euro in value. So you can't use 50-cent pieces or anything like that. And they give you a bad exchange rate, and they don't take credit cards. Well, they don't take American credit cards. They take the chip cards. Did they?
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
I bought a bottle of juice.
I was trying to get a bagel, and it wasn't working out.
Apparently bagels are different than
well,
juice.
All right, fine. But the point is, they should have done something because it was their fault that I was stuck in the damn airport for 4 hours because I already had a two-hour layover, and they added another 2 hours to it. So by the time I got to that final security point, I was in a bit of a bad mood as it is. and we have to wait on a very long line. And it split up into two sections. People on the left got screened. The people on the right did not get screened. And the people on the left were Arabs and black people, literally. Nobody else was over there. If you were Arab, you got sent. No, maybe yours was different. But in my particular case, it just I was able to predict this person's going to get screened. This person will not get screened. I was 100% right. I've never done that before. And that it's just maybe they use racial profiling in England a lot more flagrantly than they do here. But it was really kind of atrocious.
Well, I got screened.
Uh-huh. And well, you do look kind of Arabic.
I don't know. And they told me that because I argued with them, which you're not supposed to do. They don't get happy when you argue with them.
You were wearing the burqa, weren't you?
Don't tell
I'm
that.
I'm
on
just
the
saying
radio.
That might have been what did it.
But they told me that this was at the behest of the U.S. government, that not the U.K. government.
That you particularly get screened?
No, that the whole 20% thing was going on.
Uh-huh.
And she told me if I didn't like it, I should write a letter to the Department of Homeland Security.
In her British accent, she said that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, a lot of people working there apparently don't like it either, but they're just doing their job, and I've heard that many times before.
Well, I told her she should write a letter to the Department of Homeland Security. It would have much more weight than my letter, but she didn't seem into that.
Well, do you think she didn't like it or that she was just following orders?
I don't really know.
Hmm. Okay, so I don't know. Security is crazy as it is, especially if you go through England. But, yeah, as you said, in Germany, it was a lot more low-key, like everything else seems to be. I don't know why. Sometimes you go through a security checkpoint and you make the thing beep, and other times you go through and it doesn't beep, and you're not doing anything differently. Sometimes your belt clip can do it. Sometimes a filling in your tooth. I don't know. Sometimes I think it just beeps because they can make it beep on will. Anyway, all right, so that's it on airline security for now. We have a special treat for the listeners, that courtesy of our friend Lynn, who sent us this package in the mail. It is an LP record. Yes, a vinyl record. We have not had long play record. It's one of the new things coming out these days. It looks like a CD, except it's much bigger. I guess it can hold more data. Look at the size of this thing. Isn't that something?
It's orange.
And and we have a special machine set up to play this. Now, this actually, it has a label. It's only one side. It's not a two-sided record. It's a one-sided record. This is from 1958, and it's labeled, I don't know where Lynn got this, October Bedroom Promotion Extension Spot.
You know, I didn't even know they had digital recording in 1958.
It might not. And in handwriting, it says New York Telephone above that.
Huh.
Cuts 1 through 4, announcement number 2, 7362 dash, I think it's 60 seconds each. Talent repayment required for use after this date. Okay, so it is after December 15, 1958, so we will have to find the talent and repay them. But first, what I'll have to do is find the turntable. Here's a turntable over here. We have no clue if this is going to work because I have not used these turntables in years. In fact, Mike, could you help me over here? Because this it's further away from the microphone than I can reach. And I noticed the top of the turntable is cracked, so I'm afraid what might happen if I lift it. Does it even come up? All right, be careful. You don't want to break it. Now, I'm going to place the record onto the phonograph like this. Okay, you get the thing through the hole there. And then you have this let me move the microphone over. They really put this far away, didn't they? Put the needle on the turntable like that. Okay, the needle is on the turntable. Now, that's only the beginning. I have to find on the board where the turntable comes up. Okay, I think I found it. That would be position B. All right, now I'm going to hit the start button, and maybe that'll make the turntable start right away. No, it did not. So I guess I have to go over here and hit the power button. Oh, here we go. There's that noise. I don't know what's happening. It's playing. Ah.
An extension phone in your bedroom is so wonderful in every way.
Save steps, no time is lost. It's handy, low in cost.
It's only a reach away. An extension phone in your bedroom, such a useful touch of beauty every day.
It's colorful and bright. Security is nice.
It's only a reach away.
An extension telephone in your bedroom is even more than just a step-saving convenience, more than just the comfortable sense of security it brings to you at night. A low-cost bedroom phone is a wonderful feeling of better living, an extra touch of elegance and luxury that will make your day. Why not order one for your bedroom, in color, and if you prefer, with a handy built-in nightlight from your Bell Telephone business office.
It's handy, low in cost, no time or effort lost. It's only a reach away.
Oh, wow, that's... Hold on, let me turn this off. Okay, that's awesome. Wow, I'm going to get one of those now. That, yeah.
Kind of telephone?
Well, yeah.
You can have them in your
bedroom. For your bedroom. You can now have an extension phone in your bedroom and improve the quality. With a nightlight.
With a nightlight.
I don't know how you do that. But, yeah, they used to have these nightlights that were powered by the phone, right?
That's insane.
Yeah. Really, it's great. We have a couple more of these announcements. They sound like they're from the 20s, actually. Not from the 50s. I don't know how it gets so scratched up. But let me hit the button again. All right. Hopefully another one will come up in a second. Well, you know what? This might be one of those records where LP records, you could make the band in between tracks not advance so that it would just like play forever like it was at the end of the record, and you'd have to physically go and lift up the needle and move it like a millimeter ahead. Otherwise, it would just do this forever. The record is still at the beginning, but it's after the first track. Bernie, are you familiar with this technology?
Yes. The groove would not be... would not be spiral. It would just sort of be the same endless loop of silence until you moved it to the next track.
Well, this is hardly silence, but yeah, it's. I think that's what's going on. It's just endlessly moving around, and this will happen for the rest of the show, unless maybe Mike goes over there and fixes it.
I don't know if I know how to work these things, but I'll try.
Yeah, give it your best shot. It's kind of. Have you ever operated a phonograph, not Kevin?
Yes, actually, I have.
Where's your microphone? There it is. Go ahead.
I have actually.
You have? Okay.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people have not. I know a lot of people have not handled rotary phones. And make sure you get it right, Mike. We don't want to ruin the beginning of the announcement. Okay, here we go.
An extension phone in your bedroom is so wonderful in every way.
Save steps, no time is lost. It's handy, low in cost.
It's only a reach away. An extension phone in your bedroom, such a useful touch of beauty every day.
It's colorful and bright, security is nice,
it's only a reach away.
An extension telephone in your bedroom is even more than just a step-saving convenience, more than just the comfortable sense of security it brings to you at night. A low-cost bedroom phone is a wonderful feeling of better living, an extra touch of elegance and luxury that will make your day. Why not order one for your bedroom, in color, and if you prefer, with a handy built-in nightlight from your Bell Telephone business office.
It's handy, low in cost, no time or effort lost. It's only a reach away.
Okay, now that one obviously emphasized more the security aspects of having an extension phone in your bedroom, and I think that's something that might be of particular relevance today for people concerned about what might be going on outside their house. Have that extension phone, it'll make you feel very secure. Nothing compares to the insecurity you feel when you do not have a phone within reach. Am I correct, Bernie?
Yes, it also seemed to reemphasize over and over that something in your bedroom is only a reach away. So I wonder what they were thinking, really.
Okay, we have two more, but Mike, you're going to have to go over and do this again, because it's, as
right.
You can see, it's still...
I'm learning new skills here.
Well, there's only two more to go, so you might want to just stay over there and get the last two out of the way. By the way, our phone number is 212-209-2900. We're going to take some phone calls if you have any comments or things to say about various other issues, or this issue, too. Ready to go? It's less noisy.
An extension phone in your bedroom is so wonderful in every way.
Save steps, no time at all. It's handy, low in cost.
It's only a reach away. An extension phone in your bedroom, such a useful touch of beauty every day.
It's colorful and bright, security is nice.
It's only a reach away.
An extension telephone in your bedroom is even more than just a step-saving convenience, more than just the comfortable sense of security it brings to you at night. A low-cost bedroom phone is a wonderful feeling of better living, an extra touch of elegance and luxury that will make your day. Why not order one for your bedroom, in color, and if you prefer, with a handy built-in nightlight from your Bell Telephone business office.
It's handy, low in cost, no time or effort lost. It's only a reach away.
I'm starting to suspect, are we hearing the same one over and over again?
We are hearing the same one over and over.
Was the second one the same as the first? Because I don't remember the security thing in the first one.
I remember the security thing in the first one.
Really? So are we're actually playing the same thing many... Why does it have the same thing four times on one record?
Maybe Mike is not changing it.
Well, Mike is changing it because I see the needle moving up each time. Mike, why don't you put on the last one, except this time we'll talk over it so that we don't waste time playing the same damn thing four times, and we'll just hear in the back of our heads if, in fact, it's the same. Yeah, make as much noise of the needle as you possibly can. It's an LP from the 50s. I guess maybe they put four of the same thing on one side in case they scratched it.
Yeah, I mean, you said that one of them was less scratched than the other, so...
Well, it was until the scratch came in. It's a catchy tune, though, don't you think? I'll bet many people in the New York area driving in their cars are humming this tune right now.
How do they make you want to buy a phone?
Yeah, well, you couldn't buy the phone, not Kevin. You had to rent it from the phone company.
Obviously.
What kind of communist thinking is that? Buy a phone. Lease it from the phone company. All right. Yeah, he's saying the same thing. Each time he's saying the same thing. Well, you know, it's good. It's good. But I kind of wish it was different each time. It's amazing. All right. 212-209-2900 is our telephone number. Let this announcement finish, and then we'll see who's out there. There actually is one other story I'd just like to get to, and then we'll get to the phones. We have a few phones. That's really at the end of the record. Okay, let's turn that down. Wow. It's good to know the phonograph still works.
And nothing else around here does.
No, that's not true. That's not true. The microphones work. And,
I'm just saying.
Hopefully the phones work.
That turntable has probably not been maintained in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
And the CD players, if they're not maintained in that amount of time, they don't work.
Well, that's true as well.
So.
Figleaf Technologies cell phone silencer and passport protector bags take Hollywood by storm. Well, I'm actually reading from a press release in case you can't tell. A simple bag that blocks your cell phone from ringing and protects your passport from identity theft was featured at the Hollywood Bag Ladies Designer Handbag Auction, sponsored by Lupus, at the Beverly Hills Wilshire Hotel this November. Apparently, it took us a while to get this story. What a lovely gift for the person who has everything. This is both elegant and practical, said Lupus L.A. honoree Dorothy Ellis. There's nothing funny about this, all right? This is very serious. Someone took a lot of time to write this. At least we can do is listen to it. The Figleaf Technologies cell phone silencer and passport protector bag, a convenient, stylish, handmade designer bag which stops your cell phone from ringing at inopportune moments. Just slip your cell phone in the Figleaf phone silencer bag and reception is blocked. The silver bag serves as a black hole as the radio waves, and I should stress that they capitalize the R and the W in radio waves, as well you should, cannot penetrate the metallic threads. When you take your phone out of the bag, the phone immediately regains reception, allowing you to view your missed calls. No, that doesn't work that way. What are these people on? It doesn't work. If it blocks the signal, how do you see your missed calls? That doesn't make any sense. Anyway, they say no more risk of missing important messages or fussing with turning on and off the ringer. But, you know, it's blocking reception, which means that it's not just blocking the ring. There's no magic bag that'll just silence your phone unless you encase it in lead or something and have soundproofing installed. It's a good idea. You know, this is actually a nice thing for people that can't figure out how to turn off their phones in theaters or can't go into silent mode. They can stick it in this bag that's encased in various materials to prevent signals from getting through.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
It's worth pointing out that this is a really good way to kill your cell phone battery, too, or at least drain it, because your phone will, while it's on but unable to pick up any of the tower signals, will valiantly keep trying to send out, like, here I am type signals, trying to establish a connection to the network. And in doing so, it uses up much more power in sending out that beacon signal over and over and over again for as long as you have it in the bag. So be prepared when you pull your phone out of that bag after it's been there for a few hours for the battery to be on its last legs.
Well, just as a point of information, I've noticed that particular circumstance happening, but only with CDMA phones, only with, say, Verizon Wireless or Sprint PCS. I have not noticed the same phenomenon with GSM carriers like T-Mobile or AT&T. Do you think they have a different way of sending out the signal?
I've heard that. I use a CDMA phone from Sprint PCS, and I experience that problem. If I'm in a underground or something for more than a couple of hours, my battery keeps dropping as it keeps trying to get a signal. Normally, I just turn it off. But you're right. I've heard that it does not affect GSM users. So there must be something different about that technology that doesn't make your phone keep trying to reach the network. It just gives up, I guess, after a while.
Okay, let's take some phone calls. 212-209-2900. Let's go over here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hello, yes. I love those old Ma Bell commercials.
Weren't they great?
Except that their bit about doing it in the bedroom. Well, the one phone we had in our house was in the bedroom, because when I grew up and I was a teenager in those years, it was in the one phone was in the bedroom because we lived in a railroad flat, and the maximum distance from both ends of the railroad flat was two rooms to get to that bedroom.
Wow. And, of course, you leased that phone from the phone company,
That's
right?
That's right, yeah.
Did you ever consider getting another phone?
Never.
Hmm.
Not until they changed their whole business setup.
Do you, in fact, sir, still have a rotary dial phone?
Yes, I do.
You do? How did I know that? You're not using it now, are you?
I don't use it, no.
Oh, okay.
I do have one of the early Touchtone phones, because those wonderful gold contacts were probably the most reliable. I'd hate to give that up for checking lines.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, those were the days, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah, one phone company and one network and a lot of fun to explore it.
Yeah. Oh, except it cost you money if you did a long distance.
That's true. That's true, if you did it their way. Any other comments?
Nothing else besides that. Love your show and hope you keep it up.
Thanks. And where are you calling from?
From the great state of Brooklyn.
Okay, great. All right, I'll keep it real there.
And take care.
All right, 212-209-2900. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Interesting. Controversial. But it's the kind of point we like to make here on this radio station. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
I love your show.
How you doing?
I was just going to ask you quickly, do you own that German car, or do you lease it?
You're talking about the smart car?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's German. It's European. But, no, I own that. Well, I own it through a series of agreements with some other people. But it's Canadian. But
it is?
Yes. That's because before this year, smart cars did not exist in this country. I understand this year they exist in this country. I've yet to see them driving around, but apparently you can now buy them in the States.
Yeah, do you know? Because when I was in Germany a year and a half ago, they said I couldn't. It would be too costly to send it here. And I saw. Let me change the subject because I'm not interested in that.
All right.
I saw this program on an English car, much smaller than your little car, and made by, running by magnetic energy. Do you know of it? It was on one of the science channels.
I've always heard about cars like that. I don't know specifically which one you're referring to.
Well, where do you think, a whole bunch of them, he designed them and they showed them running. Do you think we'll be having those?
Well, I'd like to think we'll be having those, but there are always people and companies and institutions that sort of stand in the way of that because it might lessen our dependence on oil. So,
forget about the oil.
Well, I'd like to forget about the oil, believe me, but unfortunately the people who run things...
What does yours run on?
Well, mine runs on diesel, but it runs on...
Is it costly?
No, it's not costly because it runs on very little. And
one of these days I want to see one here. I haven't seen any here, but you said through Canada maybe you could get it?
Well, no, you can get that one through Canada. That one's a diesel car, but the other ones will be gas, and they'll be available in this country.
I don't want that.
I guess then you have to try the Canadian solution then. But thanks for your call, and thanks for reminding me that they're coming to the States this year. And good evening. You are on Off the Hook.
Hi. You know, it has recently become more difficult to hear WBAI in Brooklyn and Queens. there's a pirate on 99.3 now.
Is there?
Yeah, and normally I don't really mind pirates as long as they stay on their channel.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is not staying on his channel.
Tell us something about the station. What kind of...
I really don't know. I mean, it's Caribbean music. I'm trying to hear BAI, so I'm trying to... Luckily, I have a radio that has a regular analog dial, so I can, you know, turn far enough away. My main radio only goes by 0.2, so I can only go 99.5 and 0.7.
Uh-huh.
So that's, you know, that's a little too far away. Luckily, my analog radio has come to the rescue.
Well, guys, it looks like we might have to pay another visit to a pirate radio station out there in the boroughs. We've done this before. We've tracked them down, and we've given them a little warning, not on behalf of the FCC, but on behalf of radio stations, saying, you know, move it somewhere else.
Just fellowship. You know, stay on your channel, and everything will be all right. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, nobody will get hurt. But this is not acceptable. 99.5, you don't mess with that frequency, not in this city.
Exactly.
All right.
So
thanks
it's on
for
the
Brooklyn-Queens
border.
Brooklyn-Queens border. We'll
right.
check it out.
Right.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll get a team on that right away. And good evening. You are on Off the Hook.
Hi. I just tried finding out about the DTV 2009. They have a 888 phone number. You don't have to go by computer.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, okay.
And they had an automated voice, which confirmed my name and my address, even though I have, you know, the... phone number blocking thing in place on my phone. They knew who I was. And I ordered a couple of coupons, even though I admitted that some of my TVs might have a cable. They still allowed me to get a couple of coupons. And then I tried calling back to see if I could amend my application to ask for just one coupon. I made several attempts, and I found out that I could not. But if I don't use one or both of the coupons and they expire, then I can reapply. But it is first come, first serve, and they're expecting to run out soon.
So there's a finite number of them?
Yes.
I see.
I have that toll-free number if anybody is...
Okay, what is the phone number?
It's 888-388. 2009. That's 888-388-2009.
It's DTV. DTV 2009.
Yeah. Triple A. Before midnight tonight.
Well, that's what the number spells, DTV 2009?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, that's clever. Thanks thanks for the information.
You're welcome.
All right, and that's going to do it for us as far as phone calls tonight. This rather sad note... guy named Liam O'Gallagher. I don't know if people are familiar with this name. We've played him maybe on this radio show, maybe on another radio show. Who knows? He was an avant-garde sound artist, painter, and teacher whose San Francisco studio became an early gathering place for beat writers and poets in the 1950s. He died December 4th at the age of 90, and we just found out about it, actually. It just sort of released. He did this piece years ago, maybe back in the 70s or something, called Border Dissolve in Audio Space. Now, we've played this on the other radio show, Off the Wall. If you go back to November 2005, you might find the entire piece. We're going to play some of it going out tonight. Basically, this guy sat in his studio in Berkeley, California, and tried to get the phone number from long-distance operators to zoos all around the country. And fascinating study of the phone system back then, and the way things sounded and how they sounded differently. That's it for our show. Yes, go ahead, Bernie, quickly.
Can I make a very brief announcement?
Very quickly. Go ahead.
On Tuesday, January 15th at 7:30, the New York Civil Liberties Union will be having a Your Papers, Please forum to explore Real ID Act in New York State.
Okay.
It's Tuesday, January 15th, 7:30 p.m. It's a Huntington Town Hall in Huntington, a place that's dear to my heart.
I don't know why you're echoing this. Turn that down. All right, thanks thanks for that. And here is... Okay, now the CD players now. You're right, Mike. There we go.
United States and Canada. One, dial local operator for local time, Pacific time.
Thank you, operator. Okay. Information? No. Buffalo, New York.
New York City?
We're not no, Buffalo, New York.
Buffalo, New York.
49 and 10 seconds.
Is this Buffalo, New York? Is this Buffalo, New York?
Dial operator.
Yes, what's the name?
I wanted the city zoo.
For area code and information.
Number for the city zoo.
Is it the city zoo operator.
Yes, operator, I'd like the area code for information.
I can hardly hear you, sir.
Can you give me the area code for information for British Columbia?
British Columbia, all right. Sir, what city in British Columbia?
The capital.
The city, Z-O-O.
Now you have me, because I don't know. What is it? Vancouver?
Buffalo
Victoria?
City Zoo.
I don't know. What is the capital?
Vancouver, yes.
All right, Vancouver would be 604, and then 555,
Berkeley,
and 12.
Thank you, operator.
You're welcome.
Yes, is this the Buffalo operator?
Yes, and what did you want here, sir?
Well, do you have a city zoo?
He's to do Washington.
I can't hear the name you're saying.
A zoo operator. Right.
Yes, operator, could you give me the area code number for information in Seattle, Washington?
You dial 206 and then 555-1212.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Hey, that's right, out there. Hi, out there. Hey, Kat. You're listening to WBAI, as you know already, I'm sure.